Welcome again to Mormon Land, the Salt Lake Tribune's podcast about LDS teachings and culture. I'm Dave Noyce. I'm a managing editor here at the Tribune. I'm with Peggy Fletcher Stack, our senior religion reporter. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, Dave.
A recent Time magazine article titled How to Raise a Sweet Son in an Era of Angry Men, pretty provocative title, explored how American society is awash in talk of gender equity, wage gaps, and the Me Too movement, which is exposing decades of men sexually harassing women, or worse. Here to talk about how one Mormon mother is raising her children in this climate and how it affects them and her is Andrea Radke Moss, a history professor at Brigham Young University, Idaho. Welcome, Andrea.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you with us. Well, to get started, Andrea, maybe you could just tell us about your family arrangement. How many children do you have? How old are they?
So my husband and I have two young children. I have a son who is 9 and a daughter who is 7.
And so you are in the midst of a kind of a sea change here in this society. Let's start with gender-neutral toys and clothes and gender-neutral language. Do you see that rising, Andrea, or are we still in an era where girls get dolls and boys get trucks?
I do see a change in general. When I started raising my children, I thought maybe I would be alone in wanting more of the gender neutrality of their play. But in speaking with other parents, I found that a lot of them had, and at least in my circles, had similar interests in raising their children to explore kind of both their masculine and feminine sides of play and imagination and those kinds of things. So, but I still think there's holdouts. I think that there's, you see some stores that are trying to move towards embracing more gender neutrality and how they portray toys. I personally seek out children's clothing from a lot of overseas brands, like European brands that tend to have a little bit more gender neutrality. I have found a clothing line that actually offers, for example, clothes for girls that have things like dinosaurs and space shuttles on the girls' clothing, and on the boys' clothing you don't see as much of, say, feminine motifs, but maybe some bugs and flowers. So it seems more like the clothing is embracing more maleness for the girls, but not as much femaleness for the boys, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. And along that line, I mean, it does seem to be okay for girls to dress in what has traditionally been boy clothes, but boys not so much in dresses. Do you think that's true?
Oh sure.
Yes, still true.
Clothing. I think it's always been true that it's more okay for girls to dress in traditionally boy clothes rather than boys to dress in traditionally girl clothes. I think that parity, even with more awareness of transgenderism and fluidity of gender roles today, is not, I don't see that one changing as much.
So before we talk specifically about Mormonism, one more quick question is, your children are pretty young, but have you talked to them about this Me Too movement, at least in simple terms?
Very simple terms. We've taught them from the time they're very little that no one is allowed to touch their bodies, especially the parts of their bodies where they go to the bathroom, without their permission. And even in the family, like, if you know, that we give hugs, and there's, you know, obviously with kids there's roughhousing and whatnot, but we always make sure that they understand that outside of our family that no one can touch them without their permission. And so that message has been pretty instilled in them from the time that they were little.
Have they asked any questions along those lines?
Not really. Not yet. They mostly have just kind of gone with it, and they accept it. There hasn't been too much from their end, any curiosity or more explanation needed yet. So but they are still little. So
let's segue to Mormonism a little bit, which is a pretty gendered faith. I mean, boys and girls are often segregated, with boys going into, say, young men or scouts, and girls having young women.
Right.
Are these positives? Do you see a need for changes? I mean, do you see, are they good, healthy, or?
I think that within any society, there's a need for some gendered segregation as far as the innate needs of males and females to a certain extent. But I tend to be more of seeing humans as humans, and male and female children having more in common than they do different. And I think that's partly why I've been really fascinated by the conversation that's emerged about boys being in crisis, that's come out of some of the recent school shootings and these other exhibitions of violence, et cetera, among males primarily, and how are we dealing with that as a society? So as far as how the church does it, obviously, I see it as pretty segregated. Primary age, it tends to be pretty gender equal, but before they're, say, 11 years old, it's more talking to children in general. Their roles, per se, aren't necessarily parsed out by gender, more as you are children of God. But then once they become of age where they're going to be divided into the unique needs of male and female, then those conversations become more pronounced. And children become more aware of that, of what boys are going to get, what girls are going to do. And I'm not to that stage yet in my parenting, but considering some of my own beliefs, I think it's going to present some challenges for me. So,
do you think there should be more equity between, say, financial equity between scouting and young women? That seems to be a widespread complaint.
Yeah, that's one aspect of it. I think I've followed a lot of that conversation over the years, and I think it depends on from ward to ward. I hear some people say, well, in our ward, the young women get way more money than the boys do, et cetera. But I think it's more in the messaging. For me, especially for the young children under 12, is you have the messaging that the boys get this fabulous program where they get to dress up in a uniform and they get badges and medals and programs and activities, and the girls get two activities a month. And there's definitely no parity there. I mean, it's very obvious there's no parity there. And the way that it's often told, that when I've asked or pressed about it, is it's because of this conversation that we're having, is that boys need all the help they can get. Boys are naturally uncivilized. Boys need much more nurturing than girls do. Girls are naturally good. Boys are naturally bad. And so more programs for boys means that we're channeling their innate problems of personality, their innate roughness, into more refined ways, and so they need more programs. But I don't really accept that argument.
Yeah, because, I mean, look at your own husband and son. Would they fit into that category?
No. My husband is definitely, I mean, somebody who loved scouting and was very much a scouter, enjoyed the program because it fed into his need for the outdoorsy, the natural. It was a program that very much worked for him. But as far as channeling some kind of this innate Lord of the Flies kind of character that he had, that is not true. He's just this very gentle, soft-spoken, very meek, non-aggressive person in his nature. And so that's where I am, is that we're still at this point in our conversations about boys and girls, that somehow boys are more naturally rough, aggressive, coarse. Girls are more naturally soft, sweet. And those adjectives are consistently still applied in a lot of ways. And I would like to see us move away from that and instead to that there are characteristics that both boys and girls share, but also characteristics that we don't want either boys or girls to do. I don't want, when, for instance, one of my children, if my son hits my daughter or is physical with her, I don't say, boys don't hit girls. I say, we don't believe in hitting people as a principle, that violence shouldn't apply to either boys or girls, and that he's not under the assumption that somehow there's a special rule for him, but he's still getting the rule, if that makes sense.
One question on the Scouts front, too. You know, the church is taking some steps away from scouting, I guess, a little bit. Mm-hmm. And some strides with, like, changing what they used to call, I think it was, like, priesthood preview or something like that, which just had the boys. Mm-hmm. And they're making change, so it involves both. Do you see those as positive steps? You'd like to see more of those?
Sure. I saw that as a positive step in general. I still think there are very significant differences as far as what they're preparing boys to do and what they're preparing girls to do. The emphasis on the temple, many people saw as a positive change. There's still definite gender differences there, though, as far as even what, quote-unquote, boys will be allowed to do in the temple versus what girls, quote-unquote, get to do in the temple. And I say let's wait and see how that plays out, but that's a step in the right direction of kind of bringing the boys and the girls together with, you're all going to be doing temple worship and temple ordinances together kind of language. There are still some differences that are pretty obvious that we'll have to, yeah.
So, I mean, those delineations in the faith, of course, proceed, and even as they grow up, of course, the family proclamation, often touted by LDS leaders and speakers, talks about, sort of delineates roles, I guess you could say, for men and women. Though it touts partnerships in marriage and things like that, men are sort of spelled out as the providers and women as the nurturers. What do you think of those, mm-hmm. like, generalizations or that kind of role delineation?
Those are interesting delineations from the point of view of, you know, for me as a working mom, where I see it more that both my husband and I are the providers and both my husband and I are the nurturers. And that works for us. I think it's a healthy sharing of roles that I'm sometimes confused how we basically fall on the sentence in the proclamation that says that in these sacred duties, men and women are to, or husbands and wives are to kind of support each other. However, the wording of that is, it's kind of lost on me right now, but the wording of that, you're basically sharing the roles. I would love to see more of that kind of emphasis that parents are responsible for providing and protecting and nurturing their children. That would be kind of my more personal inclination for that kind of language. But I do see that many people do rely on those gender differences in the proclamation, perhaps to help raise up men to an expectation of their fatherly duties, where in some cultures or in some traditions, maybe those responsibilities have been lost or are more being filled by women and not being filled by men as they should be. And so on the one hand, I see why people hold on to the language, that kind of strict gender binary of the language of the proclamation. But for me, I still prefer, and the kind of language we use in our home is more mommy and daddy both provide for the family, and mommy and daddy both protect you, and mommy and daddy love you and hug you, those kinds of things. And so, I think we're going to see a shift in that language, but at the same time, there is this reemphasis on kind of the proclamation as this standard, not quite canonized, but very important dogma that the church centers a lot of its language around in terms of the family. So,
do you worry that the church, via, you know, church leaders in your area or from the top, are going to send a pretty strong message to your kids that that contradicts the message you're trying to give them in your home? People are taking them aside and say, well, your parents might do this, but the doctrine is this.
Yeah, there's always that whatever is a little bit more dogmatically emphasized in from whatever teacher they're going to have, something that comes across at church that is perhaps more dogmatic than what my husband and I would do, then the way that we've approached that is just to converse about it at home and talk about it. Well, some people see it this way, but we see it more this way, or whatever, you know, those kinds of everything mm-hmm. that you hear, mm-hmm. you're going to do some explaining at home through your lens, the lens of the values of your family. And so that's how we approach it. And because I'm known as a working mom in our little community, in our little congregation and community, I think that just my presence makes that more visible. And for instance, I had a Beehive teacher ask me to come in and speak to her Beehive girls about the importance of women in education. And she wanted me to talk about that, you know, these issues, that I'm a working mom, and to show them that I've got an education. And that was really important to me, that some people are reaching out to some of these changes, these more fluid changes, I guess.
So one of the LDS Church's unique theology is this idea that God is not only the Father, but also there's a heavenly Mother. And how does this affect teaching your children about gender? Does it help you?
Yeah, because they're so little, we don't necessarily deal with some of the doctrinal or interpretive challenges of it. It's more like we talk, just the way we talk at home, that we believe in a Heavenly Father and a Heavenly Mother, or we refer to our Heavenly Parents. And just to help them to understand as children that they have both a mommy and a daddy in heaven. And we haven't yet dealt with maybe what some of the doctrinal or at least implementative problems are with how much we refer to Heavenly Father versus Heavenly Mother, etc. And so eventually that conversation will come. And luckily we've had recent examples just in our local congregation and other places where certain leaders have talked about Heavenly Mother from the pulpit or in public settings. Ironically, where you would think that would fit more would be in primary, but in primary they actually don't get a lot of Heavenly Mother. Either in the lessons, the curriculum of primary does not include Heavenly Mother, either discussions of her or references to that. It's more that it's coming out in adult meetings or a sacrament meeting or a state conference where she's mentioned. So I would like to see more that children can learn that they have a Heavenly Mother from a very young age. There's no songs about Heavenly Mother, those kinds of things.
True. So now we come to the kind of tough question, and that is, what are you telling your children about priesthood? Not all male priesthood. At some very near time, your son will probably be ordained to the priesthood. What are you telling him and your daughter about that? Are they already aware of it?
They are, because it's hard not to be aware. When they are very little, they notice that the boys get to pass the sacrament and the girls don't. And some of the things they have commented on and been aware of. My son, because he's 9 going on 10, is just now starting to get the lessons in primary about being prepared to receive the priesthood. And I think we've not directly dealt with it yet so much. That's something that I'm trying to prepare for. I think with these recent changes on discussing how, for instance, this temple preparation meeting that the 11-year-old boys and girls go to together, I think will be a big part of that change. Again, we just do what we do in our family, where I tell my daughter, both my son and daughter, that both of them are actually passing the sacrament when it comes down the row to us, when it comes down our aisle. We talk about how all of us are passing the sacrament to each other, that we're all ministering this ordinance to each other in this way, and that we're shared. This is a brother and sister act of love that we do for each other by passing the sacrament to each other. And so in that way, I've been trying to kind of put off talking about the gendered aspect of it for my own sanity. but that's how we're talking about it now at just their young age. But eventually that conversation will have to come. I think it's going to be more, not so much a conversation for my son, but more for my daughter, because they're so close in age and they're such good friends, that she notices every little teeny tiny difference between the two of them. She's very aware. She's very observant. Anything that he gets that she doesn't get, she's the first to call out. He got more than I did. Whatever. And so when this comes up, and it helps to be able to talk about that both boys and girls have access to priesthood authority the way that Elder Oaks has talked about it. And also when we've given, when it's time for like back to school blessings for our children, both my husband and I do that together, so that we've modeled for them that mommy and daddy can exercise that parental right together for them. And so we're working on it in our own way, but I don't necessarily have the conversation of how unfair and unjust or whatever I see it as. It's more like my gentle way of still keeping them loving the process, but maybe slightly aware of some differences, but our own ways of adapting to those differences.
So we've talked about these things in Mormon teachings and culture and also in society at large. And I might fumble this question, but does Mormonism in totality help you in how raising your kids the way you want to raise them? Or does some of the things in Mormonism work against what you're trying to do?
I would say both. I'll start with the working against comes in that we do have pretty strict gender separation when it comes to priesthood ordination, et cetera, and these very separate men, what men get to do in the church versus what women get to do. I see those as pretty distinctly different. But where Mormonism definitely works for me is that the gospel itself and the way that we teach the gospel embraces a masculinity that is a much more loving and gentle masculinity than what I see sometimes in other religions or just America at large. Definitely in our faith, I think that we have so many men, visible men in leadership, who model a form of masculinity that truly embraces like this Christ-like meekness, soft-spokenness, that you are in touch with your feelings when it comes to feeling the Spirit of the Lord, when you talk to boys about love and service and how to be gentle ministers. We have that. I think we do have that in spades. And I, for one, am grateful that our version of teaching masculinity, even priesthood responsibility, is based in Section 121 on that no power shall be exercised without without love, without forgiveness, charity, all of those qualities that come with quote unquote being a good man. Now, whether people actually do that in real life, of course, that's up to each individual. But I do think that the version of masculinity that I want my son to embrace, I do think is modeled for him in our church, and in the men that he knows in his life is definitely modeled for him.
So
Mormonism, yes, works for what I'm trying to do with my children, but I also have some challenges with that strict gender segregation that I'm not as much into.
So, short of big changes, doctrinal changes in the church, what little suggestions would you want to make to the church to improve this gender equity? Things that wouldn't involve, as I said, big doctrinal changes, but just little programmatic changes.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that there's so many programmatic changes that I think would be so easy to do, particularly for children. I mean, the age that I'm dealing with is the under the age of 12. That's where most of my parenting experience is, in this age group. And, you know, when you have this definite emphasis on boyhood, I mean, it's an overt emphasis on boyhood over girlhood. That, I think, can be changed, and can be very easily changed. Not necessarily that the girls need to take on the Girl Scouts of America. Probably that ship has sailed for whatever reason. And for the time being, the Boy Scouts, the Cub Scout program, is the program for the under 12 boys in the church, the 8 to 12 boys. I would just maybe like to see something, I would definitely like to see something that's more equal for the girls, like that they meet the same number of times a month, that they have some kind of program that celebrates their achievements, that they have badges or ribbons or something. Girls like to wear stuff on their shirt too, just as much as a boy does, and to have anything that is somewhat similar to what the little boys get. That would, as a mother of both a boy and a girl, that would, right now, to find something like that for my daughter, I have to go outside the church to find that. And some people would say, well, what about the activity days, girls, the achievement days? Well, that's a start, but it's really difficult to get the same kind of emphasis. If you call somebody that calling, you still run the challenge of somebody might not be completely committed to that. And so maybe the girls meet, maybe they don't. Maybe the types of activities that they're doing are nowhere near the level of fun and scientific exploration that the boys are getting. So that's just one example. You know, looking back at things that we think are doctrinal, and maybe addressing whether they're doctrine or whether they're just practice, like girls passing the sacrament, those kinds of things. I mean, girls do pass the sacrament. They just happen to be sitting in a row in a pew passing the sacrament to the person next to them, but they're still holding the tray. They're still in the act of passing. There's small things that I think we could do.
So all good suggestions.
This has been real interesting, and we wish you luck in raising your little ones. That's always a challenge under any circumstances. Thank you so much for being with us, Andrea.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. Peggy, thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
We look forward to your coverage at sltrib.com, and we'll see you again on Mormon Land. Thanks.